It's February 2nd, 1993. I'm at the home of Mrs. R.K. Coffee, and with her, we'll be doing an oral history project. I'm Neil Park.
Going right between the wars. Okay.
Pull a child if you want to.
Okay. Let's start off with World War One.
Well, I was in 1917. I went to the academy at Athens College,
right,
a preparatory school, and it was during that year. I mean, in 1918 was when the armistice was signed,
right.
And one funny incident I remember about that, we celebrated all day that day. You know, we didn't go to classes or anything, and we were supposed to go to study hall at night.
Right.
And had a supervisor, and we studied for 2.5 hours. Well, I would go to music hall and practice an hour of the piano, an hour of that time. But anyhow, we didn't go to study hall that night, and so they punished us for that. And we had to make up that time, 2.5 hours. We had to stay in school that so much longer every day till we made up that 2.5 hours. So I'll never forget the armistice. But World War One was a very traumatic time for even people in small towns, because a lot of our young men went, and one young man from our town was killed in the war. But of course, everybody celebrated when it was over. And then one of the worst things about World War One, though, was that we had a depression after.
Yeah.
After World War One, and the depression in the 1930s was so much worse and lasted so much longer that not much is said about the depression after World War One. But I was in school at Athens College, and my brother was in school at the University of Alabama, and my sister was in school at the University of Montevallo. It was then called Alabama College. And our father lost everything he had after World War One. We were just left. He wouldn't take the bankruptcy
right.
court. And he, at that time, there was a stigma to taking the bankruptcy law. Now, you know, you can work it off with that Chapter 11, but you couldn't then. And so I had finished school, and I started teaching.
What year was this?
What
year was this?
1921.
Okay.
1921, I started teaching.
And that was where?
My first year was in Wadley. It's a little town over near Roanoke. Do you know?
Yeah, that's
you know where Roanoke
Virginia?
Is?
Virginia?
No, Alabama.
Oh.
Roanoke, Alabama. It's down in Randolph County. It's from here you go. Randolph County is not very far from here, but I lived in North Alabama, so it was pretty good distance from where I lived. But anyhow, it was a small town. But before I went to Wadley to teach,
yeah.
I had made application at Lynette, Alabama. That was a big school,
yeah.
And it was a larger town, and all. And I had a letter from the superintendent saying that they had already filled the position, but that he liked my application and that he'd like for me to apply again later on at another year. Well, I went on to Wadley to teach, and had been there but about 2 or 3 weeks when I had a letter from this superintendent, and he said the woman that came didn't like it and had gone.
Oh, really?
And he wanted me to come.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't leave the school where I was, though, because they were nice enough to take me, and I just didn't think it'd be right. So I wrote him and told him that I couldn't leave there, that I felt obligated to stay there. So he wrote me back and said, well, he'd like to hire me for the next year, and wanted me to come over and visit the school, which I did. And so the next year, I did go there and teach. I taught there 2 years, and I met my husband the first year I was there,
yeah.
And we were married in 2 years, And then I talked the third year after we were married. And then I was pregnant with Marion, and Marion was born, and I didn't teach. But the next year, I decided to go back to teaching. And I was offered a place at that same school,
yeah.
And then at another school. I took the other one because they furnished a house with it, and I taught kindergarten and piano. But anyhow, that doesn't have anything to do
with
that.
What was teaching like then? Like, what were the students like?
Very different to what they are now. You know, the thing that I noticed most about students when I was at the university and later years, and I notice it now, they want freedom, but they're not willing to take responsibility.
Okay.
You know, they think they ought to have everything their way.
Yeah.
But they're not willing to take the responsibility that they ought to take. They're not all like that. But in working with college students when I was an advisor for the newspaper, we would always, every year, we would have somebody on the staff that didn't want to do anything but criticize. Just didn't see good in anything, you know, wanted to criticize. And that didn't make me very happy. I always felt like that we ought to be, I was not against criticism, good criticism, constructive criticism, but I was against just taking out after everything that didn't please some individual. But anyhow, I think that there'll always be people like that, I guess. There are people like that now.
Movie reviews.
I listen to a lot of, I listen to CNN and C-SPAN. They have talk shows and people phone in, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, a lot of individuals are like that, you know. They want everything that way, but they don't think about that. Everybody in general,
yeah.
Their responsibility to their country all the way we ought to think, you know.
Yeah.
And let me see now. I married, and of course it was not in it. I don't remember the thing of any special importance. My husband was a newspaper man, and he and his three brothers were in business together in West Point, Georgia, and Lynette was in Alabama, just across the line. That was on the border of Georgia, and they had two newspapers, the West Point News and the Chattahoochee Valley Times. There were six towns that just went from one into the other. West Point was in Georgia, and then Lynette, Shawmut, Langdale, Riverview, and Fairfax were all in Alabama. And the Chattahoochee Valley Times was the paper for all those towns, for the five Alabama towns. And they had job printing, and they had a real good business. And
were people really interested in national affairs?
Yes. And but one thing I was going to tell you about that. I think it was in 1928 that Herbert Hoover ran against Al Smith.
Right.
Al Smith was a New Yorker, and of course Herbert Hoover had a wonderful reputation because he was internationally known, and he was a great humanitarian and philanthropist, and had a lot of things to his credit. Al Smith was a sort of a gutter type person.
Yeah, did the prohibition, was that the big issue?
No, that one.
That wasn't that big.
Prohibition was not the issue then. I don't remember. Prohibition was a long time before that.
Well, I think Herbert Hoover was a wet, and Al Smith was, or a dry.
No, Al Smith was wet.
Yeah, Hoover was dry.
But that was, but I remember when I was a little girl marching in parades when we would parade for Prohibition.
Oh, really?
But I don't remember when the vote was taken on that. Seemed
oh,
like that,
the vote was earlier, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Seemed like it was maybe in the early 1920s.
Yeah,
was it around 1921?
I think it was around 1920.
Well, I thought it was. Well, anyhow, Al Smith was a member of Tammany Hall, and he was a Catholic. We'd never had a Catholic president. You know, there's a lot of prejudice toward that. But anyhow, my husband's newspapers, and they were Democrats, you know, always for generations been Democrats, they decided to support Hoover because they didn't feel like they could support Al Smith. Well, that was just like dropping a bomb in a Democratic community, you know, and a Democratic state. Alabama was just almost solidly Democratic.
What about him being a Catholic?
What?
He was a Catholic too, wasn't he?
Yeah, and a lot of people were opposed to him on that camp. I don't remember that I was, but anyhow, they decided to support Hoover. And my husband said, and I didn't hear the conversation, so I couldn't prove it, but he said that the Democrats came and offered to buy their newspapers, pay them for it, whatever they asked, and let them continue to run it if they would change their editorial policy.
To pro-Democrat.
Yeah, uh-huh. And then give it back to them after the war, after the election, you know. But anyhow, from then on, they never did vote solid Democratic. They always called themselves independents. And I guess they were. But that was one thing I remember about that election. And then, of course, President Hoover he was given the responsibility for the depression that followed.
Just unlucky.
The crash there, Wall Street crash, you know, and then the depression. And the depression lasted a long time. In fact, it lasted until World War II was well underway. I think the war was what brought us out of the depression, the putting people to work, making munitions and implements of war. And then President Roosevelt was elected to succeed President Hoover. And of course, there were a lot of people that were in favor of President Roosevelt and the things that he did, and there were a lot of people that were against it. And some people still feel like that some of the things that he started,
the New Deal,
that were not, that things were not really, that they were socialistic,
yeah,
and that we're still paying the price for them. But I think, although I didn't vote for Roosevelt, I think that he was wonderful. I think that for a man to have the mind he had and to conceive the things that he did to bring the country out of, it was really miraculous the way he managed and brought the country out of the depression it was in. And, you know, one of the things I remember was the WPA, you know.
Yeah,
anybody that wanted a job,
yeah,
could get it. And they weren't paid big wages, but they were paid enough to sort of help support their family. We had a boy working for us whose father was on the WPA. And it just put food on the table, you know. That was what it really amounted to. And I sort of think maybe Clinton's going to end up having some kind of program like that,
right,
the new president, Clinton. I believe that he may end up having some kind of program to put people to work. He's talked about it, about on highways and bridges and things,
yeah,
that need work, you know, and we haven't had it done. But anyhow, President Roosevelt, I think, was elected four times. And he was just idolized by a lot of people, and I admire him more now than I did at the time. But I think I always appreciated what he did for the country.
But you didn't vote for him any time?
What?
You didn't vote for him the four times?
I don't think I ever voted for him. I just, at the time, my husband was opposed to him because his father and he and his brothers thought that there was a lot of socialism in what he was doing, you know, and maybe there was. I don't know. I know we've been a different country since then we've espoused things that we never had espoused before. But anyhow, he was, and then after his President Truman, Vice President Truman, of course, succeeded him, and he was a very ordinary person, but he has time has proved him to be a much greater person than he was, and we thought he was. The things that he was a very independent person, and he had very definite ideas, and he wasn't afraid to, and convictions. He wasn't afraid to say what he thought, you know. He was very outspoken. And